I'm Jamie Waxman. This is the Hot Socks Podcast. Sex writers, explorers, adventurers, and girls who just make me laugh, also mothers and women in long-term relationships looking for ways to spice it up. I'm so excited to be bringing M and Lo to the Hot Socks Podcast. Follow them on Twitter at mandlo.com. I think that there are so many books out there now that are cashing in on the whole 50 Shades of Grey, and why wouldn't they? But the thing about 150 Shades of Play is that what you guys do, Em and Lo, with this book is you make it accessible to the people who the book spoke to. And there are so many sex educators out there who are, you know, trying to teach about what's wrong with the book. And you guys take the other approach to teach about what's right with the book. And I feel like, and make fun of it at the same time. So when did you first hear about 150, like, how did you hear about 150 Shades of, or 50 Shades of Grey? I should start with that.
I mean, just like everybody else, it was just it started popping up all over in the media. And we actually resisted it for a really long time. Even though you would think, like, we should probably have our finger on the pulse, we were just sort of like, oh, it sounds bad. Do we have to read it? Like, it was going to be not fun.
And everyone just talked about how bad the writing was in it. And, you know, there's just, so we get so many sex books, we have to read so many sex books anyway. So the idea of reading bad erotica just sounded so, the last thing we wanted to do.
But then it got to the point where it was so crazy, we couldn't ignore it. We had to read it and just find out what the big deal was. So I got through all three. You know, I didn't like it, but I couldn't put them down. Read them all weekend. You read the first
one. I read the first one, and then I really wanted to find out what happened next, so I just looked up in Wikipedia to see plot, because I knew if I looked up the plot in Wikipedia, then I wouldn't have to read number two and number three. So.
Well, I got through four chapters, so you guys both beat me.
It's not easy. It's not easy, but we do say, we give her credit for her ability to write a pretty good sex scene. I mean, and that's basically what it is. Like, you know, just one right after the other. Thankfully, there's enough, like, the in-between stuff is the worst part about it.
Well, so why do you think, you said that you wanted to see why people got it. Why do you think 50 Shades spoke to so many people?
I think it's a lot of different reasons. I think she figured out a way to make people feel comfortable with this kind of subject matter. I mean, and not just kink, but just sex scenes in general. Most women who read this book had never read any kind of erotica before. And I think partly it was its roots in Twilight fan fiction, which was already kind of erotica for moms, you know, but without the sex scenes. And partly it just, I think it helps that there's so much money in the book. And in the same way that you've seen that the more high-end a sex toy is, the more comfortable someone feels using it, because if you spend a lot of money on it, it's not as dirty as if you get a really cheap sex toy. And I think all of the money and the brand names and the being swept off in a private jet makes it seem less kinky.
Less raunchy.
Less dirty.
Lowbrow.
Yeah, it's more aspirational. I mean, it's like Cinderella, but with kinky toys.
It's the Cinderella of kink story. I kind of like that, Em. I would go with that from now on. And then, so do you guys, you don't consider yourself kinky? I mean,
no.
You guys, I mean, are the Emily Posts.
We're not in the scene. We don't have that. We're not in that lifestyle.
I mean, it is all relative.
Yeah.
You know what?
We're kinky to some people in our community, just because of what we do for a living and the way we talk openly about it. But it's not like either of us have our own red room of pain or
gimp in the basement or anything.
Yeah.
That would be a really hard one to explain to your children. Why is there a gimp in the basement, Mom? So,
although my daughter, she accidentally, I left the book out and she started flipping through it, and I quickly took that away because of the illustrations in our book.
Oh, right. Yeah, which is also another wonderful thing about your book. I like, you guys have really cornered the niche on the A to Z market around sex. It's something I really appreciate because I'm one of those people that I like when I have neatly ordered, like, okay, I can look up in A, I can look up, and you even mentioned anal sex, which in the sex positive community is something, you know, that people are like, oh, everybody tries it or does it. And you bring it up as something that, you know, that might be as kinky as you ever get, like touching a butthole. So yeah. That there's this whole spectrum. I mean, there were words in the book that I had no idea what they were. And I think, what was the, so how did you start?
Yeah, we wanted to, like you were saying before, we wanted to write, it's, this book is not for seriously kinky people. It's not going to appeal to them. It's probably going to offend them a little bit. This is definitely for people who've read that book and who were intrigued and were interested and needed, were looking for a little more guidance, because 50 Shades of Grey doesn't provide information on safety or how to or instructions. And with a lot of kink, there's so much safety involved and technique involved. So we wanted to like lay a groundwork for that, but also sort of like open those readers' eyes up to the whole spectrum of kink and like give them a little voyeuristic look into maybe some of the more extreme elements, the hard limits that Christian Grey wouldn't do, but that a lot of people do, because it is fascinating and entertaining to see, you know, different people's fetishes and different people's kinks. And how willing, you know, how creative they're willing to get in the bedroom.
How did you guys do research for the book?
We did a lot of reading, a lot of interviews. We had a few assistants who, not kinky assistants, just interns.
Research
assistants who are much more in the scene than we are. And just, you know, we found that
we see a lot of things online that we can't unsee.
But the great thing about writing about sex in general and kink in particular is I feel people want that information out there. Like someone who makes their own paddles in San Francisco, or someone who is really into rope and tying knots. Like those people are excited to share their information with people who want to learn it. There isn't this idea that it should be the secret club where outsiders don't know that. If you're genuinely interested, they want to talk to you about it. So we interviewed a lot of people who have a lot more expertise than we do.
So were there things in the book that surprised you? Was there any specific act that you had been like, oh my God, what is that?
I mean, you know, the go-to extreme entries in the book are adult babies and pony play and scat play. I mean, those are probably like off the top of my head, those are probably the most out there stuff that we do in the book. But one of the things that I found the most disturbing was the human furniture.
I was about to say the same thing.
Wow.
Just in the fact that people let people sit on them, or that you have to stay in these positions, or
get these women get in these mostly women get in these crazy bound up positions to the point where they're just made into inanimate objects where you put your feet up on them. Or, I mean, I don't, they're not really that functional. It's much more an art of form, but yeah.
And there's definitely,
it makes my inner feminist get a little bit sad.
And it's also, I'm assuming, unintentionally funny, you know, like the human ashtray, the human toilet roll paper holder. And I don't know if that's meant to be funny or not, but it kind of is.
Actually, that's something you say in 150 Shades of Play that I really appreciated was, you know, if maybe you'll think of us as bad people, but we laughed. If you don't laugh, you're better than us or whatever. And here I am even like, and I, as you said this, the human furniture thing came up. I just did in San Francisco last year, the San Francisco Sex Information Training, which is a 60-hour training course out here that people apply to and get into to learn more about the different sexualities that are out there. And a friend of mine does the furniture thing. She gets people to be her furniture. So she's like, oh, he was my chair. And like, as she says it, you know, I just nod. But as we talk about it here, the idea around how this even comes to be, it's more than even silly, it's fascinating. Like, just where does that come from? How do you find this?
Yeah. And we try to not be mean in the book. I think, I hope that most of the times we laugh, it's not mean-spirited. And I mean, I'm sure people who are very into certain things like Human Furniture might find it a little mean-spirited, but we try not to kind of point and laugh at what other people do. It's more just being honest and being like, this, you know, you might find this funny, but there's also an element of being able to laugh at things and then try them. And if you never try something that you like, you know, sometimes the first step is laughing at something and then you're like, well, maybe we'll try it anyway. You know, I mean, a lot of sex toys and accoutrements and positions and a lot of things seem funny the first time you read about them or think about them or try them. And then maybe after you've laughed at them, you can then move on and try them. But it's also okay to laugh.
But also reading about all those things would maybe make the 50 Shades readers feel like, okay, so trying a little anal play with my husband is really not that big a deal in the grand scheme of things. Or getting my first sex toy, that's really not a big deal. Like, I'm willing to try, you know, that's pretty tame in this whole world.
Right. And you bring up the other point that is so important in long-term relationships. If you don't start trying new things, it will get boring. It will get monotonous. It will get to the point where you're wondering, like, what are we going to do? Our sex life is sort of, you know, flatlined. And that this is a great resource for finding, oh, well, even just reading, like, if you read about something and you never want to try it, it will bring you to something you might try as a result. Like, I mean, I'm fascinated. I ask you guys what you think the most unique, I'll call them right now, kinks are, because I've always been fascinated by really odd things. And they're not things I incorporate in my life, but like scat, you know, poop play is something that I will go, when I was in Europe, because it's huge over there, videos and all that, I will go into stores and just look at the boxes, like how, why, where, like, I don't even want to wipe my own butt sometimes. I don't want to admit I poop, you know. And I have to say too that I use an extra word, but dropping the kids at the pool is something I always say. And so it was so relatable to me in the book. I enjoy, and I agree with you. Like, it's not, I didn't ever feel like you guys were making fun of things, but I enjoyed that you could have fun with things. Because right. I think that when it comes to sex, we take ourselves so seriously because we feel like, well, this is something I'm doing with my body and I must, you know, be okay with it. And it's okay to laugh about it, even if you do try it or don't try it.
Like, it being a fun book and there being jokes throughout, it just makes it more palatable. I think it makes it, like, for a true beginner or somebody who's really, like, new to this stuff or not very experimental or pretty vanilla, like, it's just an easier on-ramp into this world.
And it sort of gives you permission to read about something if you're laughing. You're like, oh, this is just a fun, jokey...
It's a bathroom book.
Yeah.
It's a coffee table book.
It's kind of like when, you know, sex toys that look like rubber duckies or lipsticks or hairbrushes. It's like, oh, it's a fun, like, bachelorette party joke. And then you're like, but maybe if I try it. So it kind of knocks down people's defenses a little bit. We've always found that with joking around a little bit. It makes people feel a little more comfortable hearing about kinkier things.
Now, I met you guys a long time ago now in this field, which has grown so tremendously since our Naked New York days. And I wanted to ask, do you feel like sex information education has changed, that people are more comfortable in this realm, or is it still really difficult to talk about? You guys live in a suburban area. Is it difficult for people around you to talk about sex?
We had a book party for this book a few weeks ago, which is the first time we've done an event since we've lived up in a small town. And we definitely shocked people more than we used to in New York City, for sure. But
not as much as I was expecting.
Yeah, maybe not as much as we were hoping. We thought we might be a lot more shocking. But, you know, you give people a couple of glasses of wine. And, I mean, it's amazing what 50 Shades of Grey has done in terms of making it acceptable to talk about these things. I mean, there were, like, 50-year-olds at the party. You know, our local librarian was there. It was And it was just, it was fun. You know, we threw a raffle for sex toys and everyone was buying raffle tickets. And it was just, it was good, clean, dirty fun. Which I think it's definitely, I can't imagine it would have been like this 10 years ago up here.
Is Fifty Shades of Grey in the library?
Oh, yeah. At least last summer, to get a copy from the library, it was like a months-long wait.
Which is kind of awesome that many people are comfortable going to their local little small-town library and requesting 50 Shades of Grey.
I wouldn't even read 50 Shades of Grey in public. Like, I just don't understand. I write about sex for a living, and I wouldn't do that. So I'm really blown away by the number of people who will be at the airport, be on a plane, or be at the pool and read and be reading it. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. What do you think it says? Do you think it? I mean, I'm just socially, so like from a sociological perspective, is it people saying like, yes, this is my way of saying I'm comfortable with sex? Or
I think it's just that so many people are reading it, and people have heard about it from someone who they think of as pretty conservative, or they've heard about it from their mother or their mother-in-law or their sister. And it's just, at this point, I think it's become such this huge thing that everyone's reading it just because everyone's reading it. So it's not, it's kind of, it's become so huge that it's become bigger than the fact that it's an erotica book, which is kind of funny because it's still incredibly sexy. I mean, it's not, you know, our book is a how-to book, so it's dirty, but it's not necessarily a turn-on. We didn't intend our book to be a turn-on, but
we never do.
Yeah, but 50 Shades of Grey is definitely a turn-on, which, and that is the thing that shocked me the most, that people are willing to read something that is probably turning them on in bright daylight.
Well, either that, they get a thrill out of being turned on in public, some kind of like secret inner exhibitionist thing going on, or else they're so disconnected from their sexuality that they can read that and not get turned on.
That's a great point. One of the things that you do, because you say that, I mean, 50 Shades of Grey has probably been the biggest change for forward-thinking sexuality in the last decade. You guys put those little ties next to the 50 Shades entries, so that if it is something, because friends of mine started emailing me about Kegel balls, and I had no idea that they were in the book at the time. And apparently people can't keep them on the shelves because of the fact that they were there. So you have this nice little neat tie that lets people know, okay, if this is what you referred to. And you also, I want to talk about your products for a second, because you guys were very specific. And As a sex educator and as a writer, I really admired that you were just like, we are sticking with Lilo or Lalo. I never remember which way is the correct way to pronounce it.
I think it's Lalo.
Yeah, I don't know. I say Lalo. She says Lalo. So
it's like Kegel or Kegel. It can go either way. But Lalo. You're sticking
with... But either way, they're awesome.
They're awesome. And they have their Luna beads. And you guys, why did you decide to just go with one company when you wrote this book? You talk about sex toys in it, but they really are specifically from a very well-done perspective.
Well, we partnered with them, so it's an official partnership, and we love their toys. We love their approach to the way, we love that their toys are so nicely packaged. They all come with warranties and instructions, and they're beautifully designed. They really match the aesthetic of the book that we're going for, and also that we felt would match people who'd read 50 Shades of Grey. They're just great toys for beginners. They're beautiful. They work. They're just like, we like every toy that they've done. And so we were...
If Christian Grey, I mean, that's probably the brand that he's buying anyway.
It's true. Yeah. And it's the brand that I think a lot of people would be most comfortable, like you said, buying, because they're artistic and they're well crafted. I love little things that have blinky lights. They have lights on them, you know, and
right. There's no, like, you're never going to see a Lalo dildo that's realistically veined, you know, that's just not a thing, you know?
It's going to always look beautiful and look expensive. I mean, they're not cheap, and that's one of the great things about them, because the materials are quality and the design is quality. And we were big fans of Lalo from the beginning, like before we ever got together with them, before we partnered with them officially, and we would recommend them all the time. So it's really a great relationship for us, because we would be recommending it anyway. So we're happy to have them as our sponsors and include them in the book, because it makes sense. And if it didn't make sense, we wouldn't have done it, because our integrity as sex writers who give a lot of advice is really important to us. So if we felt that it was not a good match, we wouldn't have done it.
And what it also allowed us to do, we published this book ourselves under our own imprint, which is the first time we've done something like that. And we, working with Lalo, let us do that. And so the freedom we got in terms of doing this book ourselves, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in there that we'd have been hard-pressed to get by a traditional publisher.
That's true. So
we knew exactly how we wanted to do this book, and we also wanted to get it out quickly. So we were able to just be completely independent and just do this whole thing the way that we wanted to do. Design, layout, you know, all of that stuff. So
what would you say to people who want to self-publish? Are you glad? I mean, obviously you're probably glad you did it, but the book looks amazing.
Well, we don't call it self-publishing, because it's our own imprint. It's called Better
Half. What's the imprint called?
Better Half Books. That's a company, and I mean, we're the company, and we do everything as we usually do anyway. But
it's really well done, and I mean, you guys have done all the books you make are high quality, and for people, I mean, there might be people here who don't know you from even your Nerve days, which is where Emin Lowe, you guys, that's where you started. And how did you two meet?
At Nerve.
And you, okay. And then you guys just clicked right away, because you guys have been, I want to say BFF, which is kind of just my high school term here, but for a really long time.
14 years, right? 14 years we've been writing together.
Did you ever think this is what you'd be writing about?
For 14 years? No. We're so old in this field now. Like, every college newspaper has a sex columnist, and we're the veterans.
That's what I started to feel like. I've actually gone back to school to become a therapist, because I really want to start focusing, if I can get into a good one, on relationships, so that, you know, because that's such a huge part. And that's something else that you guys have the experience and background with, is you're both in relationships, long-term relationships. And so you're coming from not only the place of being, and I love what you said, Lo, a writer who does a lot of sex advice. I always, terms in this field always like, do you guys ever call yourself sex educators? What do you call, and you guys are. So there's that, but like, you guys come from the two places as the sex writer and as the person in the relationship looking for more.
Right.
You know, yes. So you have ideas from
my own advice. I need to take that advice.
So, you know, they say that the plumber always has leaky faucets.
Right. Those who can't do, teach.
That's what I say when people always say to me, oh, you teach sex? You must be, I'm like, those who can do, those who can't teach. I saw myself shorter than maybe I should, but this is like just a personal, like almost like fangirl question. How do you guys write so funny about sex? Because I think that you are two of, if not the funniest sex how-to writers out there. Yeah, and Dan Savage, well, I'll give him that too.
Thank you. That's so nice. Thank you.
It's really true. You guys make it accessible, but you keep it so light that you... I mean, I started reading the book, and I had all this work to do, and I just couldn't put it down because it was so easy. It's so funny, and it's so you.
Yeah.
Did you guys always have that voice around sex?
You know, when we started working together at Nerve, we developed the voice together, and it was sort of a reaction to women's magazine sex advice, which didn't speak to us, that we thought was too coy, too earnest, too serious, and not that helpful, and not willing to go into those like real areas.
And I think it probably also stemmed a little bit from our initial discomfort with the subject matter and this idea that, like, we don't know what we're doing, which in the beginning we were just figuring things out as we went along. 14 years later, we, I think we're sort of self-educated sex educators now, but I think we were slightly uncomfortable and we felt like we understood the place that people were coming from hearing this. And there is even stuff that's not particularly kinky. A lot of people feel uncomfortable with the idea of improving their sex life, or the fact that you have to work, or that you have to read something, or that you have to try to improve your sex life. It makes people feel like there's something wrong with them. So, and we kind of understood that. So we, I think it was just our instinct to be funny, to make people feel like it's okay, you know, hey.
And it makes us feel better. I mean, I can speak for me. It makes me feel better, even just in my own life. Now, do you guys, what do you think about scheduling sex? Do you schedule it? Would you?
So are you saying personally or for other people?
I guess both. Well, whichever you feel like answering. There you go, though.
I feel like the longer I'm in a long-term relationship, the more sense it makes to me. I think it's a good idea.
I do, too, because I think we...
Everybody knows, like, let's get ready. So everyone's going to be on the same page. So there's, like, you have time to get in the head space, which is hard to do if you have kids and are super busy and have a million things going on and are stressed out. I know single people can be just as stressed out, but I think having children, there's a special stress level that comes with that.
And an added responsibility. I mean, I don't have a dog or a cat. I'm not responsible to make sure this, anything, you know, gets to what it needs to do for the day. So there is a huge difference there. And I mean, I think scheduling sex allows you to, like, get the kids to a movie or to a play date. Right. So they're out of the house. And so
it's not going to be any interruptions. You can shower, which is always nice.
Brush your teeth for some time in the day. And having, I think the difference is with kids is that they're a very, like, physical presence in your life. You're sort of, especially little kids that we have, you're just always touching them, or they're touching you, or they want to be on your lap, you know? So sometimes you get to the end of the day and you just want to, like, not be touched by anybody for a little bit. And so if you're scheduled, you're like, okay, I can just, sometimes you just need, like, a 10-minute shower on your own with no kid, like, knocking on the door wanting to come in. And then if you know that you can have that first, and then that gives you time to get in the right headspace.
If couples, this book is geared towards, like you said, people who are really new to exploring kink, or are just curious, or I actually think anyone who wants to have a really educational and informational book that would also make you laugh and that would make you want to show it to your friends, I would personally say 150 Shades of Play, unless you're so serious about your BDSM lifestyle that if someone makes a joke, you can't take it. This is a book for anyone.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks.
I'm excited to see what comes next. What would one, if people took away one thing from your experience writing this book, whether it's something in the book or just from the experience of writing it, what would you say?
I think it's the idea that we think everybody should try kink, but you get to decide for yourself what's kinky. So you should try something every now and then in your sex life that makes you blush and makes you a little nervous to think about. And maybe that's anal sex. Maybe that's something much kinkier that you can read about in our book. But just pushing yourself beyond your comfort level a little bit is kinky. And that's, you know, it's all relative. It depends what you consider vanilla yourself.
Yeah, I think making it your own and figuring out, you know, what works for you. And I think sometimes when you start reading about kink and BDSM, there seems to be lots of rules and, like, this is the way it's done. And when it comes to safety, that's true. Like, it's very black and white in terms of safety. But in things like, you know, issues of being a top or a bottom, and the like sort of like strict rules where like topping from the bottom is looked down on. But I think for a lot of readers who were enjoying something like Fifty Shades of Grey. Like, they want to be submissive, but it's a very, like, romantically defined idea of submission. They just sort of, like, want to be, like, freed of the responsibility, lay back and, you know, take over and ravish me and I get to just enjoy it. And, like, I think it's okay to be very specific in how you want to do it, what's comfortable, like where you won't go. I mean, that's part of it too. Like, not to suggest that the BDSM communities don't suggest that you shouldn't have control, even if you are a sub, because you, by definition, kind of do ultimately agree to everything up front. But just little things like, I don't know. I just, don't think like topping from the bottom is necessarily a bad thing. So, and I know that in the community, like, it's sort of like, oh, that's.
So it's a way to make up, like you kind of both said a little bit, your own style. This is a manual, like with a lot of ideas for how you can dress, but right. You then might take a top from here and a bottom from here and put your own belt in between. And that can, and that works. And that's,
yeah.
And that's really, I think that's the thing about our sex lives. I think I'm in this like esoteric place right now about like, what's the meaning of life? And like the whole thing, we take it all too seriously. Have more fun and play. And I really hope you guys inspired me to want to get back on the microphone and do a podcast, which I have not done in months because I loved this book and I really want to make sure people know about it. The website is 150shadesofplay.com. Buy the book on Amazon or through the site. It will link you to Amazon. Follow you guys on Twitter at EMANDLO. So it's M and Low on Twitter. And you were one of the inspirations for me in, you know, following my path as a sex educator, because when I met you guys, I was a TV producer starting to do that more. And I always love the way you guys give sex advice. You do it well, you do it sassy, and you keep it real.
I'm Jamie Waxman, and this has been the Hot Socks Podcast. If you want to follow me, I'm on Twitter at JAMYE. And if you want to laugh and learn to love a little differently, read 150 Shades of Play. It's one of those books that I just think you need to have around. Thanks for listening. Bye.